Back together again, you and I, on a Thursday, April 20th edition, 2023, of Connecticut Today. We looked at the first observance of 420 since the state's legalization of recreational marijuana with Fine Fettles COO Ben Zacks. Blogger Lenny Grimaldi joined us from onlyinbridgeport.com. We also chatted with Journal Inquirer of Manchester columnist Chris Powell, and I had a few thoughts about the tax and budget talks ongoing at the state capitol. And the real story today is, well, I guess if there's a marijuana holiday, it's today, April 20th. You've probably heard of 420. First one here in Connecticut since adult recreational marijuana sales began a while ago. Ben Zacks joins us. We've had Ben on the show before. He is COO of the Fine Fettle locations, Manchester, Newington, Stamford, Willimantic, here in Connecticut, also Rowley, Massachusetts, and Martha's Vineyard in Massachusetts. Ben, it's Paul here on WICC. How are you?
I'm doing well. Happy 420.
Ben, I hope you're hanging out at that Martha's Vineyard one. I hope you got a nice location there. What's up with that?
Sadly, today I'm not on the vineyard, but happily I've actually hit all of our Connecticut locations today. I started in Manchester, up to Willimantic, Newington, and now I'm here in Stamford.
Yeah, Ben, what is the origin of 420? Did I read that it had to do with 420 in the afternoon on a clock somewhere? Is that what it was or not?
So there's a lot of folklore around 420, but the most common story is a group of high school students in 1971 in San Rafael, California, used to meet at 420 to consume cannabis. And there's also some folklore of a treasure map leading to some hidden marijuana of extremely desired genetics that they used to search for starting at 420, and a group that called themselves the Waldos. But it's taken on a life of its own. Now it's sort of the cannabis holiday and, you know, all about, consuming the plant, but also celebrating it and working on and looking at the progression over time of this changed stigma and, you know, the progress made around everything that has to do with cannabis.
Ben, you just hit me with the desired genetics. Does that mean good stuff? Is that what a scientist says? Just desired genetics?
I think that's the scientific vernacular for sure.
Well, you're as much a businessman as anything else in this, Ben. These are now four profitable businesses. So how's it been since the rollout began here months ago? In Connecticut, about what you expected. I remember when we talked earlier that you said you were blown away just looking at the parking lots at some of your locations, seeing everything from, you know, beat up pickup trucks 20 years old to Mercedes and BMWs. How's it going?
Exactly. And I'd say that what's clear is people really enjoy this product and the residual products that come from it. We've seen continued growth and increased demand in every one of our stores. We opened up a fourth store in Manchester about 5 weeks after January 10th when we opened our three and saw zero cannibalization. Another store opened up in Stamford. We didn't see our sales go down. And so we think that there's just an increase and swell that's coming. Overall, I'd say the sales and the business have been solid. It has not been Massachusetts at the beginning where there were lines around the block and just clear demand on insane prices. We're in a more matured market and area, but overall things have gone well, and we haven't seen any of the traffic issues, problems, arrests, driving under the influence that people have sort of expected. And so I think we're proving ourselves to the potential naysayers and the people who are, you know, peering out the side of their eye on how is this going.
Ben Zacks with us on this 420, which is kind of like the unofficial official marijuana holiday every April 20th, 203-333-9422, 333-WICC when we get back to open phones. Ben, I see here on your website expanding to Georgia coming up soon. Bigger and better, I guess, huh?
Yeah, we were awarded first place in a competitive application in Georgia. There were 69 applicants, and we came in first. So we're getting one of the six licenses there. We're building out a huge cultivation facility and five dispensaries. But also, just actually last night, we received zoning approval right on Main Avenue in Norwalk in the old used Subaru dealership that we'll be taking over. So we'll start construction there. We are pushing forward for our location in Old Saybrook. So we're excited about the growth that we've had and 4 years ago yesterday, actually, we hired our first employee. And now across our states, we've got 245 people. So it's been quite a ride. Not many full sleeping nights, but it was very exciting.
You talk about your employees, Ben. What type of person wants to work in this business? Are they all marijuana enthusiasts, or do they just say, "Hey, it's an open job. I'll take it. It's a growing industry. I want to get in on the ground floor." Who are some of your employees? Some unique stories, maybe.
So we hired about 100 new people when adult use started in Connecticut. And even though there's a ton on the news about, a labor shortage, we have 1,500 applicants.
Wow.
For those 100 jobs. So I think our acceptance rate is pretty competitive with Harvard's to get in and be a part of it.
I like that.
And you're not charging people $80,000 a year to work either.
No, we pay them. We give them a 401k. We match. We give them health care and dental and life insurance policy and all the above. So we do all the things that any employer, I think, should do for their employees. But we do find that people are generally passionate about the plants, but also people who come with the requisite background. So we have former managers of Starbucks and Dunkin' Donuts and people who have been in, high-level customer service running restaurants, and also people who have been doing major inventory jobs, right, ensuring that our inventory is compliant and accurate. And so it's all the same things, but we get this added level of passion mm-hmm. for what we do. And I think people see that from a few lenses. Are they passionate about the plant and consuming it? Are they passionate about criminal justice? Are they passionate about social equity? And so the direction doesn't need to be, hey, I'm a cannabis consumer. But we generally find people who want to be a part of this industry, or it's people who, love just the idea of newness and are driven by the industry we're creating. So it's been a really exciting time, and this to see the quality and caliber of employee that we get is amazing. I actually have an employee here in Stamford right now who was just telling me that he is finishing up his ganjie training, which is a sommelier for cannabis, because
nice.
There's so many genetics and cross strains, and right, so there's a passion there. And another guy in our team who is a expert coffee roaster, and so he worked at coffee shops before, and just wanted a new change in the industry, but wanted to use his sense of understanding and smell and extraction. So it's really just cool to see the people we have, and I'm honored they want to do it with Fine Fettle, because I think in Connecticut especially, they see us as we are the local cannabis company, and they're all aligned in our mission to be to make Fine Fettle synonymous with the words marijuana and cannabis in Connecticut. Our goal is that people don't search online for dispensary near me. They search for Fine Fettle near me.
Of
that
course.
Is where we want to be in the state.
Well, as in any business, Chief Operating Officer of Fine Fettle, Ben Zaks, with us. Ben, I was talking to our morning show host and telling her you were coming on today. She wanted me to ask you something like this, and we had both seen stories about some of the West Coast states, Middle American states, dealing with, maybe too much marijuana in the West, growers now considering maybe trying to sell online if there's no federal approval for that. I saw a story last week of, I think, Colorado's trying to go online. What's the online situation with this, Ben? Is this growing? What are the regulations? Do you guys have online sales? How does that work?
So the online sales currently, yes, we take in online orders, but everything is purchased and picked up in store. We're about to start delivery, it looks like, in early to mid-May, but everything else is really online because ordering online and shipping or something, that is using the post office, which is a federal organization, and so you can't do that. And one of the big question marks of just this whole industry is, where does it go from a federal standpoint? And also, what is the equilibrium within a state? So Connecticut right now, we only have 4 producers. I think we could definitely use more. Massachusetts for a while had really expensive prices, like $65 an eighth. And that was after being open for two and a half years. And then a lot of money poured into the industry, a lot of producers, a lot of suppliers, and prices end up plummeting. Businesses have started to really struggle because it's gotten too oversupplied and competitive. And so one of Connecticut's key things to figure out is what is the equilibrium of the right number of cultivators, the right amount of square footage, the right number of dispensaries, so that you find a balance where pricing can still be fair and accurate and right to the consumer, but you can have businesses that have the opportunity to succeed. And with Connecticut having such a focus on social equity licenses, by definition, they're less capitalized. And when you're a less capitalized business, your ability to start and compete is harder. And so figuring that out is going to be unbelievably important for the future of this industry and the success of candidly big and small operators, because we're seeing successes and failures across the spectrum on business types.
Interesting. Ben Zaks, thank you. Ben, the Chief Operating Officer of Fine Fettle. They're open here in Connecticut now. Manchester, Newington, Stamford, Willimantic, coming to Old Saybrook and Norwalk, Rowley, Massachusetts. And I don't know, if I was in the business, I would say Martha's Vineyard is probably my favorite locale, but we'll leave that up to Ben. Ben, thanks. We appreciate it. We'll chat down the road. Thank you.
Perfect. Thank you very much. And next time you're in the vineyard, you should take a tour of the grow. It's pretty cool.
I will. Thank you, Ben. Appreciate it. Take care, man.
Bye.
Okay, Ben Zaks there. There you go. So he said they just got the approval the other night for Norwalk. So they're in Manchester, Newington, Stamford, and Willimantic, coming to Norwalk and Old Saybrook. They're in Rowley, Massachusetts, and Martha's Vineyard. On the vineyard, eh? Yes. I wonder what the vineyard locals think. Oh, my God. They've opened one of those stores.
Because I got high, because I got high, because I got high. La, da, 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 da.
First segment, 5 o'clock hour, now every Thursday. Our check-in with blogger Lenny Grimaldi, only in Bridgeport.com. Lenny, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Hey, Brother Paul, how are you today? You know, I was listening to your last segment.
Yeah.
About marijuana, and here comes a news flash that came across CNN that more Americans are investing money in marijuana than chocolate. So
well, there you go. Why not? Hey, you know what?
I'm a chocolate guy, Paul, but just so you know.
Lenny, so when I'm redoing my portfolio over the weekend, I'll remember that. Thank you. Appreciate that. Couple things here, Lenny. Top of the blog here, you and I had chatted online about the new police chief here, Chief Roderick Porter, and at least the early reviews, Lenny, on his interaction with the city and with the peoples are pretty good, right?
Yeah, you know, this chief, he's an interesting study. He has this Zen quality about him. He's very even-handed. He's a leader who's a listener, which I really haven't seen in my 40-plus years of covering city politics and government and chronicling it. But in addition to that, you know, what he's done in just the 4 months he's been on board is he's reinstituted walking patrols, for instance, and he's doing community meetings, and he has a weekly Facebook Live segment where every Tuesday at 10:30 or so, or in the late mid morning, he explains to people how law enforcement works, how for a variety of different issues and departments within the PD, and he explains it to people, and people write in, and he answers. And he does this behind the badge social media promotion of officers, where he kind of humanizes the department, away from the traditional kind of robotic communication of police departments. And he's unafraid to say it. He says, "Listen, I'm not going to get involved in city politics. I'm going to do my job, and I'm not going to make contributions to political candidates, be it the mayor who appointed me or anybody else."
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, from Joe Gannon's perspective, that's fine because, obviously you had that, that issue with A.J. Perez cheating on the test, and then you had Rebecca Garcia who replaced him in an acting capacity. But, as I wrote in my latest column, mayors don't want to own police departments because it never works. Unless the mayor has been a police chief himself. But this chief, with Roderick Porter, He's a leader who takes a lot of pressure off of the mayor's office because he doesn't mind taking on addressing tough issues or answering tough questions. And he does it with a lot of clarity, which is, impressive, certainly measured against past chiefs.
And Lenny, I think that's common sense. I mean, in any business, but especially in policing with all these social issues right now, it's refreshing that a cop says, hey, how are you? It's a new week. Here's what's going on. I mean, Lenny, if you just tell the people, hey, we heard about what happened the other night. Here's what my officers did. Here's what's coming up. I mean, just even the harshest critics, Lenny, in any business, but especially policing, they're going to feel better if somebody just explains to them what the deal is.
Yeah, he's also in this. I don't know how this is playing with the rank and file police officer, but he has gone the extra effort to ask residents, business owners, to participate in a survey. Mm. And it's a short survey of four or five questions where he asks, he wants input. Questions, to what extent does the Bridgeport Police Department work together with community members to solve local problems? You know, how safe do you feel walking at night in downtown Bridgeport? He's asking his constituents, the residents and businesses of Bridgeport and the business owners, for input. You know, do you think crime has increased or decreased over the last 12 years? I mean, sorry, 12 months.
Yeah.
What are some of the changes can the department implement to improve community policing in your neighborhood? And this is what he does. I mean, he processes it it's, I think what it's doing is, it's too early to know for sure, but I think he's creating a better relationship with the rank and file officers and neighborhoods. And, you know, a lot of people in Bridgeport have had issues with the police departments. You know, police department,
oh, yeah.
Being a cop, right, it's not a coveted profession. And I think part of what he's trying to do is, you know, make police work relevant for his officers, mm-hmm. as well as the community, to have that bridge. So you have a better information flow for when, you know, issues, you know, occur.
Sure. Lenny Grimaldi is the guest, only in Bridgeport.com. Lenny, one of your lead posts also is the chief, in fact, and the parks director and the mayor, kind of getting ready, reminding people, Lenny, about the rules for the parks and the beaches once the warm weather gets here. And I guess this has to do with the stickers and permits and all that.
Yeah, so this is an example of this chief, you know, taking pressure off of the mayor's office, because you had a couple of incidents in Seaside Park, which is a great Olmsted Park, you know, 300 plus acres along Long Island Sound. And it's a magnificent landscape, but you had two issues. One, you had unauthorized concerts there, getting rowdy. There was a shooting, and then you had some people. A lot of them came from New Jersey. I don't know why. But
hey, let's go to let's take our rides and all go to Bridgeport, right?
Yeah, and let's do an unauthorized car show. let's just do an authorized car show. So, you know, the chief got together with the public facilities director Craig Nedrizny and the mayor yesterday, talking about having checkpoints occupied earlier on warm weather days. Now, usually you start getting into May or mid-May, and you have the checkpoints that are set in place for people. Mm-hmm. But on warm weather days, they're going to have a greater police presence along with checkpoints, which hopefully will take some pressure off of the park, which is going to host Sound Down Sound Music Festival late September, early October, which is going to be a huge event for the city.
Absolutely. Lenny, got to ask you before we let you go here. In fact, earlier in the show, there was my talkables of the day. Your old buddy, your old boss, Donald Trump, his poll numbers, Lenny, continue to rise, even with the Alvin Bragg situation, even with the with the expectation of more lawsuits here. But boy, I got to tell you, Lenny, this is only my personal opinion. If the brag thing was a way for Mr. Trump to get the nomination again, it might work. I mean, his poll numbers have keep going up, at least among the Republican base.
Yeah, and we're going to see that he's still got there are a couple of key investigations that he's facing. With the Department of Justice and with the voting issues in Georgia, which it appears he might get charged one or two times more. And we'll see how that sinks in. But, you know, the thing about Trump, and I worked for him for 4 years, mm-hmm. He's a guy who didn't think he was going to get elected president.
Yeah, I know.
So for him, no, he didn't. He didn't think he was going to win. He was bored and he ran.
Yes, and that's been written about, Lenny. And I tell people that's been written about in a couple of columns and books. Yeah,
yeah, I did it. I've written a bunch, bunch of times about it. When I worked for him, he would talk about, in 1996, what do you think? Should I run? I'm a little bit bored. And 2000, the same kind of thing. And I had an opportunity to have a conversation with him when he was president-elect in 2016, but he didn't think he was going to win. So he's playing with house money.
Mm.
And for him, it's, he's enjoying it. I mean, look, no one wants these kinds of investigations, but he's got the backing of a certain, base in this country that will not, walk away from him. DeSantis is an interesting juxtaposition to him. I think it's way too soon to see. I think we'll have to see how these other charges, if he's charged and how that plays out and in this process. And also, how big is the field going to be next year? Because in 2016, you had basically, 10 or 12 establishment guys, right?
Yeah.
And Trump's rolling along. In some of these states where you have open primaries, where unaffiliated voters can vote, and he's just running up numbers because they're splitting up the traditional vote or the anti-Trump. So I think a lot of it depends on how wide is the field going to be, what is the law enforcement pressure on him, and will some Republicans say, hey, look, he's our guy, but we want to win the general election. And that's been the problem with Republicans, putting up these Trump candidates in primaries.
Oh. Well,
it's the traditional, and they win, but they can't win the general.
That's it. The dynamic is so different, Lenny. You're right, primaries versus the general. The website, folks, the blog only in Bridgeport.com. Lenny Grimaldi with us. Lenny, thank you. Have a great weekend, and we'll be sure to chat next week.
Thank you. See you next week. Appreciate it.
Now is as good a time as any for our monthly check-in with Mr. Chris Powell, the best opinion writer, I think, in my humble opinion, in Connecticut. You can find him online at the Journal Inquirer of Manchester, former managing editor there, but still graces us with his opinions. Mr. Powell, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Graces is kind of a extreme compliment, Paul, but thank you anyway.
Well, Chris, I only say that because I think you have the guts to say what needs to be said. And in one of your recent pieces, you, like me, and I also talked about it on the air, wondered what one of the great American cities that I visited several times out there, I have a good friend out there, was thinking in their latest mayoral election and the reaction of the mayor who hasn't even taken office yet.
Yeah, it is amazing. The voters of Chicago defeated their incumbent mayor, Lori Lightfoot, in the Democratic primary. I mean, she was really hardly getting any votes in the primary at all because Chicago was just going down the toilet with crime and failing schools and, kids that are out of control. And so what did they do? They had a choice between a moderate Democrat who used to be the school superintendent in Bridgeport and a far-left Democrat who's been a teacher union official and lobbyist. And they elected the teacher union official as if the mess that Chicago's in is really just a matter of personalities and not policies. The guy who won is really just going to follow the same policies of the mayor that the city of Chicago just the voters of Chicago just threw out. And It's really amazing. You know, just the other day, the downtown Chicago again was swarmed by rioting teenagers that were breaking windows and beating people up and firing guns. It's just amazing how anybody there thinks that city is going to survive.
Yeah, and Chris, in that column, you also point out, and I remember following this as in my younger days, because there was this, you know, in the 70s, there was this meme that, you know, New York City was crumbling and nobody could save it. But, you know, thank God, a clear-thinking Democrat like, you know, Ed Koch stepped up and at least, you know, started the ball rolling on that.
Yeah, I bumped into some of Koch's campaign commercials from 1977
wow.
the other day. They're on YouTube, and the things he said in the three commercials that are posted are just extraordinary. I mean, he told the truth that, you know, the government employee unions are taking over the city and exploiting the city, and it's going too far, and we've got to get things back in order. And how a Democrat managed to say things like this is extraordinary. But he was the upset winner in the Democratic primary in 1977, and he twice won re-election with more than 75% of the vote for being what he said, a Democrat with sanity. Now, of course, you know, that was, what, 45 years ago. I don't know that any other Democrat is around to do that today, but I think Koch showed in the 1970s and 1980s that, gee, a Democrat with sanity, a Democrat who stood up for the public sovereignty over its own institutions against special interests, that didn't make excuses for crime, he could command not just a majority in a Democratic city, he could command an overwhelming majority in a Democratic city. I wonder if it could be done again.
Chris Powell, former managing editor, Journal Inquirer Manchester, is still a wonderful columnist there. Chris's weekend piece dealing with a couple of topics. We'll leave you to read the public safety part of it. But Chris, you had an interesting take on the Mayor Bridgeport's effort to get his law license back. Even Joe Ganim admits he won't be mayor forever. I thought you had an interesting take on that.
Yeah, a committee of the state bar has just voted 3-2 against Mayor Ganim's application to recover his law license, which was revoked when he was convicted of corruption back in 2003, 16 federal charges from his corruption during his first stint as mayor. He lost his law license. He wants it back now. His claim is that, look, he's rehabilitated himself and that this rehabilitation outweighs the disgrace that he committed back then. The bar committee is 3-2 against him. It's going to go to a Superior Court of a committee of judges. We'll see what they do. I just thought that he should not get his law license back because he was already a lawyer when he committed his crimes back in 2003, and he had you know, double reason to know what he was doing was wrong. He had the reason of holding office as mayor. He'd, you know, taken an oath to support the Constitution and all that, and he had taken an oath as a lawyer, you know, to do no dishonesty. You know, he'd really broken two of his obligations, which is, you know, different if somebody's in prison now and studying and wants to rehabilitate himself and become a lawyer, apply for a law license. I mean, you could, I think, more reasonably believe such a guy had been rehabilitated and forgive him because, you know, who knows? His upbringing might have been terrible, and he only got religion in prison and all that. He didn't have as much reason as Ganim had to know what he was doing was wrong. But, you know, somebody who, as a lawyer, committed crimes like these, and as a public official committed crimes like these, I don't think the public interest supports restoring them to the position of honor that that a lawyer is. A lawyer in Connecticut is a state official. He's a commissioner of the Superior Court, and being a commissioner gives him the legal power to take oaths and do other things that really require honesty. And I think if you betray that responsibility once as a lawyer, you shouldn't be getting it back.
Chris Powell with us, Journal Inquirer Manchester. Chris, finally, what do you make of the legislative cha-cha, the slow dance going on up in Hartford right now? Governor Lamont with some rather strong words yesterday in a news conference after he saw what his majority party was putting out as a budget. The governor, not happy. I guess Chris, earlier in the day today, the if Bill Cullen was still around, the password would be guardrails. And I'm wondering if the governor is as genuinely upset with his caucus as he seems to be.
Well, we'll see. He doesn't want to spend as much and bond as much as the far left majority in the Democratic caucus does. Maybe he's genuine about this. Maybe he's just posturing for running for a third term in the future and wants to be more like an Ed Koch Democrat than a Bernie Sanders Democrat. I don't know, but they'll have to work it out. I imagine they'll probably split the difference, and the Democrats in the legislature will get something extra for the special interests they serve, and the governor will still be able to say, well, it would have been worse if I wasn't trying to put some restraint on them.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out, Chris, where do I go around the world with my fraction of a point cut in the state income tax?
This is misleading, too, because, if the Democrats in the legislature get their way, they're going to put another, hidden tax on fuel prices. So, they'll give you a little back on the income tax, and you'll see that. You'll see that in your paycheck.
Yeah.
But the increase they'll arrange in fuel prices will be an indirect one when it gets to you. They will raise the taxes on the fuel providers, and the fuel providers will pass it along to the public, and the public will blame the fuel providers.
Yeah. Chris Powell. Chris, thank you as always. Great to chat with you. Folks, check out Chris Powell's columns, Journal Inquirer Manchester, and Chris is linked in other sites as well. Chris, thank you. Have a happy weekend, my friend. Thanks.
Thanks, Paul. Bye-bye.
Appreciate it. Chris Powell there, Journal Inquirer of Manchester. Yeah, he's right, in a sense. Right, to get that income tax cut, half a point. Where are we going this weekend, baby? Yeah, honey, our fuel oil just went up.
How much?
It's another 30 cents a gallon. I've said a few times on this show, the next time that you get any Republican elected governor of this state or any Republican elected to what we call the constitutional officers, the attorney general, the secretary of the state, the state comptroller, state treasurer, yada, yada, yada. I've said that the next time that happens, we're probably going to be on Mars. Maybe. I don't know. But that's the amount of time I think we're looking at. 50, 100 years, 150 years, something like that. But that might not be a bad thing, at least from a fiscal point of view. Look, Connecticut's never going to have, and I've told you, you find conservatives in the state. Once you get outside the cities, I see all these organizations take back Connecticut and turn Connecticut red and all this. Well, I love you people, but it's never going to happen. Maybe I shouldn't say never. But the chances of that happening right now are few and far between, at least when it comes to, to the social issues. Connecticut's never going to be a pro-Second Amendment state. It's never going to be a pro-life state, a hard pro-life state. But it is refreshing to see, I must say, on this Thursday, the 20th of April, 2023, it's really refreshing to see Governor Ned Lamont come out earlier today. We'll have portions of what he said later on through our fine friends at the Connecticut Network, CTN. The governor is telling his own party to quit the bullcrap on spending and taxation here, which is kind of refreshing, isn't it? Now, we heard that, the governor said, listen, let's stay within the spending, the guardrails. That's the big password over the past couple of weeks.
The password is guardrails.
Where's Bill Cullen when you need him? There, that's old school, huh? Bill and Betty there? But the governor says he wants to keep Connecticut fiscally sound. And, of course, he's got numerous people, numerous organizations, mainly from the left, just screaming at him, saying, no, you've got all this money, let's spend it. Well, apparently the governor's own party, and I've kind of joked about this in the past, but maybe it's true, and we chatted about this just after the news at 5 yesterday with Dan Harr from Hearst Connecticut Media. You know, it looks like the entrenched powers in Hartford are telling the governor, hey, Ned, blank you. Certainly what it sounds like. Remember, it was all kumbaya when Dan Malloy was there. He talked about Connecticut values. Remember, he used to get up there every couple of years and say, well, we spend the money because we have Connecticut values. Okay, Dan, how's that going up in Maine these days? But I digress. Well, Dan Malloy is certainly Ned Lamont. Paging Dr. Freud. Ned Lamont is certainly a breath of fresh air, isn't he? Governor Lamont says today in the Connecticut News Junkie, and we'll have portions of this later on for you to hear, Governor Lamont had harsh words today for a two-year revenue plan from the legislature's tax writing committee, in which his administration said moved roughly $400 million out from under the state spending cap. So essentially here, they're playing a shell game again. And as Dan Harr said last night, our guest from Hearst Connecticut Media, one of the ways they were likely going to do this is to say, well, we don't want to, we're going to take these expenses and just not have them covered under the spending cap, right? All the stuff that you and I cannot do with our home budgets if we choose to be on some sort of fiscal solid ground. Here's one thing the governor said today, and again, we'll have the audio of this coming up later, that I say, bravo, Ned Lamont. I know a lot of people don't like him, but I'll give the guy credit. See, that's why I'm different as a host. You have a lot of hosts around here and a lot of hosts in talk radio who will never give somebody they don't like on one issue credit on another issue. But I'm going to give Ned Lamont credit on this one. Quote, he said, quote, if you don't like spending caps, vote them out, but don't play games. Amen. Amen. Thank you, Ned Lamont. Quote, if you don't like spending caps, vote them out, but don't play games. And this is exactly what I've been talking about for years and years and years doing shows like this. The game playing that takes place in Hartford. Well, we stayed under the spending cap, didn't we? Yeah, but you moved a certain amount of money that's not going to be covered in the spending cap out from this year that's been covered in past years. Oh, you silly people. You don't know how things work. Good for Governor Lamont. The governor's comments follow 2 days of legislative action to advance a counterproposal to the governor's budget plan, $50.5 billion in February. On Tuesday, the junkie says here, the Appropriations Committee moved a roughly $51 billion spending plan to be paid for by a revenue package advanced by the Finance, Revenue, and Bonding Committee. Governor Lamont and his budget boss, Jeffrey Beckham, said the two plans were not aligned. In other words, and you'll hear the audio later on, the governor and his budget chief saying, what are you doing to us? The appropriations plan outspent the revenue plan by the tax plan by about $240 million over 2 years. What a shock! The appropriations plan outspent the revenue plan provided by the tax plan by $250 million over 2 years. The governor drew a hard line on adherence to a set of fiscal guardrails which limit state spending and require excess revenue to be sent to pay down Connecticut's long-neglected, unfunded pension liabilities. Lamont has advocated maintaining those guardrails, and the legislature voted to continue them for at least 5 years. Lamont said, quote, when you start moving some municipal aid off budget, when you start siphoning off revenues, all of a sudden your budget is out of whack and you violated your own spending caps. Good for you, Governor Lamont. Put it out there so the people can hear it. He added, my pledge to you is that we're going to get an honestly balanced budget without gimmicks and without significant tax cuts, significant tax cuts for the middle class and honoring the commitments to folks most in need. So there you go. I like that. I'm not of the I hate Ned Lamont all the time mantra that so many people are that call this station and call other stations and do all these Republican gatherings in the state. I think he's doing a good job on this. The spending cap has left many Democrats feeling that their proposed budget leaves too many needs unanswered, especially given a projected $3 billion state surplus. Folks, I told you this. I told you a few weeks ago that having a $3 billion state surplus in this state is like giving a sailor coming off shore leave an Amex Black card and sending him or her to a cat house, to a brothel. They're going to spend the money. Governor Lamont suggesting he may be open to providing more funding for nonprofits if the coming revenue estimates provided the state additional fiscal latitude. Quote, if we have a little bit of flexibility, that'd be a priority to me to do a little bit more to help for nonprofits. Good for him. Good for him. Now, let's see what it comes out with in the end. But again, I'm telling you, bravo and a thumbs up to Ned Lamont today as we begin a Thursday edition of Connecticut Today right here. 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. I can't remember the last time that we've at least had a governor say it. Now, is he going to stick to it? You know, I hope he will. I hope he does. But it's amazing that we continue to argue in this state every budget cycle. We continue to argue even at a moment when we seem to have our fiscal house somewhere, way or shape in order here. But yet there are those who will constantly say this group's not getting enough and that group's not getting enough. This is a question I kind of pose here. When is enough enough? How is it, I will ask again and again and again and again and again, how is it one of the richest states in the country? It depends where Connecticut is, top two, top three, top five, no matter where you look, this listing, that listing, Barron's, CNBC, Wall Street Journal, Wallet Hub, all that. But annually we top out pretty high in wealth based on the state wealth. How is it though that every year or every 2 years there are constant complaints that this is not funded and that is not funded and these people aren't getting paid enough and those people aren't getting paid enough? How is that possible? Explain to me, Lucy. How is that possible? I don't get it. 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. I've been trying to figure this out for 30-something years, like I've been doing. I've been doing shows like this on the radio, and it's still mind-boggling that you hear from people come budget time that the world is going to end if they don't get the money they desire. Now, again, is this a symptom or the sickness? See, I think it's a symptom. The sickness is we still have large pockets of poverty, large pockets of low-output workers in this state that we've had for 30, 40, 50, 60 years, and we still have no viable answers for it, at least that we found yet.